to the agenda here. Item 8, presentation from Veris.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'll try to keep this short. I don't think I have any more than 2 hours of material. Normal routine that we have of turning to tab 1 and taking a look at our market review and the QIL probably doesn't make a lot of sense. We're in late November now. That was as of 9:30. So during the past 2 months, quite a bit has happened. So I just wanted to share some of the talking points and notes that we've had in our morning meetings and such about what's transpired since then and help us think about what it means to our portfolio. Really, it begins with economic growth. We saw 2Q GDP come out at 3.6, and today it was revised down to 3.5, so still meaningful growth here in the U.S., and that follows on the prior quarter at 4.2. So we see some nice economic growth here in the U.S., and that's different than around the world. Japan suffering some natural disasters and flooding in southern Japan. Germany facing some pullback from auto manufacturing because of change in emission standards. So those kind of slow down some of the international growth. And then, of course, UK is kind of in the balance there with Brexit. And UK is actually having positive GDP growth, which is nice, but they are facing this Brexit issue. Now, if we take a look forward, what do we think is happening? Well, the issues in Japan and Germany are kind of one-offs. And so we would expect those to pass and those economies to recover and hopefully see economic growth internationally again. Here in the U.S., the Atlanta Fed has a GDP live. You can go on their website and take a look at what their GDP prediction is based on the data inputs into the Atlanta Fed. And it's looking like a 2.5%. So here in the U.S. slowing down, internationally picking back up. And so we had this time where we had synchronized global growth. We had a bit of a disconnect where U.S. did better. Now we're looking at that likely coming back into alignment. And we'll see. I mean, there are many other variables at play there. But that's kind of what we're seeing in terms of economic growth. That all then ties into what the Fed is doing. And so the Fed, we had Chairman Powell speak this morning and gave some dovish comments, and the market reacted very favorably. So the U.S. equity markets rallied, emerging markets rallied as well. And the comments were that we might be closer to neutral than not. And so we might be approaching neutral rates. And that's interesting because 2018, we've seen 4 rate increases, and we expect a 4th one in December. And it's pretty much set in stone, unless something really drastic happens, that December one will happen. 2019, though, has changed dramatically, and that was an expectation of 3 rate hikes. And within the course of the past month, the market kind of looked at that and said, we think that's about a 1 in 3 chance that you're going to get 3 rate hikes in 2019. That came down to a 10% chance that we'll get 3 rate hikes in 2019. And with today's comments, those probabilities come down probably even more. So we're probably expecting 2 in 2019. So that's interesting on the short end of the curve. By the way, that does have direct impact to our portfolio when we think about Insight, DFA, and the SIT strategies. Those are short-term gov credit strategies. They're benefiting from a rise in rates, and so we're seeing those tick up in terms of yield. On the longer end of the curve, when we look at the 10-year, that's the market, or one way to interpret the 10-year is to say the market is telling us where rates should be in 10 years. Is kind of one interpretation of it. And we've watched those tick up pretty dramatically. So in August, they went from 2.85 or so to earlier this month at about 3.25. So a pretty significant rise. And in terms of treasury market, that's a big deal. They have since come back down. So from 3.25, today they're about 3.06 or 07, something like that. That's the market saying, yeah, you don't need to raise rates quite as much as you thought you did. And so yesterday when I said this, it seemed really prophetic because Powell hadn't spoken yet. Today when I say it, it seems like I'm just puppeting what you hear on CNBC. So I wish you had heard me yesterday. It was But anyhow, that's kind of the issue with rates. The nice thing about all of that is while we're discussing short-term and long-term rates, the Fed is paying off its balance sheet. And so what had built up to $4.5 trillion has come down to $4.1 trillion, and no one's saying a word about it. And that, you know, we referred to the expansion of the balance sheet as quantitative easing. The Fed was pumping money into the system. And that was a lot of headline news, and that created a lot of excitement in the equity markets. As they're pulling it out and going from the 4.5 to 4.1, they stated a very logical, methodical progression that they would follow. They have followed it. They've managed to raise rates in the process of doing that, and no one's saying a word about it. And that's kind of a victory for the Fed. That's kind of a Fed miracle. And we'll see if it continues on. But so far, that's looking really good. The other big dynamic that's happened since 9:30 has been trade, and all of the discussion with Canada and Mexico has kind of settled down. We reached a new agreement there. Trade with Europe has settled down. It's really just become the China story, and we know that later this week, I think it's Friday night, that Trump and President Xi of China will sit down and have a nice steak dinner in Argentina. Argentina's a great place for steak, so I'm a little bit jealous about that. But Larry Kudlow spoke yesterday about that, and he said that, you know, that's great. We hope that there's some progress made. Them sitting down to dinner is progress in and of itself. But let's not get too excited about it, because for it to be meaningful, not only is it a trade and tariffs kind of issue, it's also the intellectual property that has to be solved. It's the ownership, the Chinese ownership of American companies that has to be solved. It's the tariffs and non-tariff areas that need to be solved. That's probably not going to happen over dinner. So while we hope that there is some progress and that, that can be beneficial to the markets overall, it's a long way to go. So when we take a look at that situation, we say, okay, that's really important. We know how big China is in terms of a trading partner. Their economy is suffering right now, and so they're structurally weak entering into this negotiation vis-a-vis the U.S. And so probably a good timing position to have this negotiation. But that trade is a key part of what's going on. That's having an impact in emerging markets. And so when we take a look at the portfolio and we look at emerging markets being down, a lot of it has to do with China and all of the countries that supply goods to China as an ancillary effect. Another key highlight since the end of the quarter has been oil and other commodities. So oil in particular is down 23% in the past 3 months. That's good for us as consumers, because when we fill up our gas tanks, it's less, unless of course you have an electric car, and that's a whole different story. But in terms of that decline in price, that was kind of not expected. And when oil was in the $60, $70, $80 range, there was expectation that it could go to 100. And it's the way oil markets always behave. They get too excited about things. But what happened then was kind of interesting, because the U.S. announced sanctions on Iran. And so the expectation was that Iranian output of oil would be meaningless. And so Saudi Arabia and Russia responded by increasing supplies. And then Trump announced that, well, okay, but China and India, other countries can continue for another 180 days of getting oil from Iran. And so because that window was created, that then created a supply glut. And so there was more oil on the market than expected. So that's largely what has led to this. Demand has also been waning. And so when we take a look at emerging markets and just global demand for oil, also for steel, there was an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal about a steel glut and copper. Those three have come down pretty significantly in price as well. So the commodities side of the story has been suffering here. And lastly, I'll just touch on valuations. Valuations continue to remain high in the U.S., and so we saw third quarter earnings come in quite strong, 25% year-over-year earnings growth, which followed on the previous quarter also of that nature. It's creating 2018 to look like earnings will have grown this year versus last about 20%. That's pretty significant. 2019, that changes to more like 7%. And so the numbers are coming down pretty significantly in terms of expected earnings growth going forward. Valuations against that have remained high here in the U.S. So when we compare U.S. to international, developed, and emerging markets, the international, developed, and emerging markets look cheaper by most metrics. U.S. looks relatively expensive. And sentiment has really changed. As you have a sell-off in emerging markets and sell-off in international markets, the sentiment has changed pretty significantly there. Up until about this month. And so we're now seeing a tick up for the international markets. We're seeing inflows into emerging markets. And so the story is starting to change daily. And then what that all means, largely we're recommending that all clients just maintain position in line with their policy. And so before we had been slightly overweight on risk with U.S. and international equities, today we're saying bring that back, keep it in line. There's still a lot of volatility in the markets. Important to watch that play out. So I'll pause there. We can jump into the performance of the plan next, unless anyone has any questions. So turning to tab two then in the binder. On page two, we have the portfolio reconciliation. Beginning the quarter at $8.4 billion, net cash inflows and investment change resulting in ending market value just shy of $8.8 billion. Pages 3 and 4 help us take a look at the asset allocation. And you can see on page 4 we have the allocation versus long-term target and versus current target. These are coming much more in line now. So now 3+ years into the FFP construct, we're now getting those very much in line. So you can see that we have versus long-term targets a slight overweight in the growth, slight underweight in liquidity, and an underweight in diversifying as of 9/30. Probably even changed since then, since success. On page 5, taking a high-level view of the plan, total policy or total fund return of 2.1% for the quarter and 2.6 year-to-date. Policy index 1.8 and 2.1. So our managers are outperforming, which is nice in aggregate. And as we take a look down the column for quarter, we see that the growth portfolio outperforms 2.7 versus 2.6. Diversifying 0 versus negative 0.1, and liquidity at 0.5 versus 0.3. So generally, that's fulfilling the expectations. We would want to see the growth obviously generate our returns. We want to see the diversifying portfolio have a positive return, and for the quarter, you know, 0. So we'd be hoping for a little bit better returns on diversifying. And liquidity coming in at 0.5. That includes the price appreciation effect. And so as rates rise, the bonds come down in price. So that impacts that. What we really care about, though, is yield, because we're holding those to pay off the liquidity component, to pay off the benefits and expenses. And so the yield on those is really key. And that is, as I mentioned, still north of 2, and in some cases 3%.
Ed, any guess on after October, November, what these year-to-date numbers would look like?
I don't know in aggregate.
October, we were down about 1.9% on a total fund basis. November, I haven't calculated yet since we're still.
Okay, for the month.
For the month,
so
we're down 1.9%.
2.6, for example, less 1.9 for 10/31. Okay.
Okay. That would jibe with other clients that I've seen. That would make sense. Also on page 5, we have the note about the correlation between the growth and diversifying composites being negative 0.15, 0.02, and 0.26 over the 1, 3, and 5-year periods. That correlation is a key component of the diversifying portfolio. We like that to be close to zero. And just depending on the time frame, it looks to be close to zero. Then page 6, taking a look at, on a 3- and 5-year basis, the risk-return characteristics of the portfolio. So on a 3-year basis, total annualized return of 8.55% net of fees with an annualized standard deviation of 4.6% is pretty favorable. That's higher expected returns with lower standard deviation or volatility than we would have expected. Similarly, on a 5-year basis, the returns of 7.5% and standard deviation of 4.8% are both favorable relative to expectations. And then a couple comments about individual managers. On page 7, you're seeing some nice performance for the quarter with Robeco, 13th percentile. So holdings in Berkshire Hathaway, Johnson & Johnson, and Pfizer were helpful there. Page 8, Pierford, first percentile, which is nice to see. So this is kind of one of those patience stories. As you see, its relative rankings in 2016 and 17 were not stellar. 2018, and its more value approach to investing have turned out to be helpful. It's underweight Eurozone and UK and overweight Switzerland, Malaysia, and Taiwan. PIMCO, emerging markets. Or research affiliates, emerging markets really, offered through PIMCO. 13th percentile, also one that has had a nice recovery, as we talked about it last quarter, as being an underperformer. And then at the bottom, First Eagle, ranking in 80th percentile, primarily due to its exposure to gold, which was down 4.8%. On page 9, towards the bottom of that page, we have the AFL-CIO. Real estate debt strategy, And so you see that ranking in 92nd percentile. It underperforms its index by 0.1%. So not drastic underperformance that way, just relative to a tight band. And its exposure to multifamily mortgage-backed securities underperformed credit. Moving to page 10, we show DFA, Insight, and SIT. The only noteworthy piece there is with regard to Insight. They have some personnel changes. These are at the management level ranks of the firm, so it doesn't impact the strategy or any of the portfolio managers or analysts that we've worked with. Cliff Corso, who did come and present to you, his role is changing. He was the CEO of North America. He's becoming the executive chair of North America. And then he'll be backfilled with by Mark Stancombe. And we also received word this morning that Parametric, who oversees the defensive equity strategy and the overlay strategy, has announced some personnel changes. Jack Hansen will be retiring October 31st of 2019. So nice, good heads up in advance of that. Paul, I'm not going to get his name right, Bausche, is moving to become the global head of research and development. Though Paul and Jack were co-CIOs, and so now that is that transition is underway. And then fulfilling this co-CIO role will be Tim Atwell and Thomas Lee. So those gentlemen, again, don't touch your strategies directly, but more in terms of the leadership of the firm. And probably going to do more due diligence on this as we learn more, but that just came out this morning. Flipping ahead to pages 14 and really 14 through 18, the details that we have on the closed-end funds for real estate, private equity, and private credit. This information is now coming from StepStone, so we're feeding it through our reporting so that it ties into the total plan results. But this information is now being fed to us, and we're taking and buying it with StepStone. So that's a change in terms of process behind this reporting. But I think it makes sense, and you'll be receiving a report from StepStone, I believe, next month. And then finally on pages 21 and 22, the investment strategy outlined there. Those are all of my prepared remarks, unless anyone has any questions.
So I'm back to page 11. No, not 11. Back to page 7. Anybody on that page that you think we need to worry about?
We've had the ongoing discussions with Jackson Square Partners. So they performed a little bit more in line with their peer group and closer to the index. That's been the one that has been the discussion point, and I think that continues on. Tim, I don't know if you had any additional updates since 9:30 on the...
Not on Jackson Square. It's, you'll recall we adjusted the fee schedule down to reflect the fact that we're going into a runoff mode with them. They don't have a long-term strategic role. They're a funding source more than anything else at this point for private equity and private credit. So they did realign the fee structure to drop it for us. Nothing has changed on the personnel side there.
Is their investment policy starting to come into favor with the way the market's going? Because the market, how do I want to phrase this? From what I understand is when their policy was when the market kind of goes down and it's stable, that their system is one that is supposed to help us rather than hurt us.
Jackson Square is actually growth-oriented, so they're trying to capture
on the growth
faster than others. That generally leads to a more volatile style. They tend to take a little more of an owner's approach to it relative to their peer group. So while the growth style tends to be more momentum-driven, they tend to be a little bit more conservative in there. But they also run a much more concentrated portfolio, so if they get one wrong stock, and if you take a look at, what year was that, 2016, you know, one individual wrong stock can really set them back in a concentrated portfolio. Now, that's not what we're seeing this quarter. We're seeing, broadly speaking, the 30-stock portfolio not being as rewarded as the overall growth index. But to answer your question, is the wind at their back? The wind has been at their back on the growth style. Growth has outperformed value since...
But Okay, so if you go with the five-year return, that's they're in the 84th percentile at 5 years. And 5 years ago, the wind would have been in their back. And it's not now.
So take a look at the year-by-year columns there, 2017 through 2013.
Or what page?
Same page, just on the right-hand side.
Okay.
On a year-by-year basis, they're generally above median every single year. But take a look at 2016.
Gotcha.
One bad year.
Yeah.
Set them back across that five-year number. So
got
the five-year number is four pretty decent years.
Mm-hmm.
And one difficult year.
All
this
right.
is a pattern we've seen with concentrated portfolios, including with Jackson Square. Longer ago, back in the 2008 period, they had exposure to MGM at the time, which really hurt them, and they had to run that number off. They recovered. Now we see it in those
okay. All right. Just for some reason, they always jump out at me. Little grin on his face. All right, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Ed? Thank you. Item 8B, Tim Price.
So, I'll use the remaining hour and a half that Ed didn't use up. You're still appreciating that joke, so we haven't gone too far.
You have a memo from us.
Discussing outcomes from a staff perspective, just as a reminder, since this is a little bit of a newer report, this takes a look at each sub-portfolio on a standalone basis and says, relative to a really simple implementation index, did the way we implement it make sense? Did we capture the market opportunity sets available? Do we outperform that index, or do we take on less risk and we're rewarded for that? And then when we roll the three portfolios up, if each one of the sub-portfolios is working according to its own unique benchmark, the total fund should be working relative to our overall results there. And what we see in the third quarter is, if you take a look at page 3 of the memo, that's where I'm going to focus most of my comments. The snapshot is all three portfolios are largely performing in line with expectations. We have one below expectations on this page, and we'll discuss that in isolation on the risk diversifying, but let me start from the top. In liquidity, this is our least complex and lowest risk portion of the portfolio. You'll see that our credit quality remained in the investment grade area at single A plus. That is a little bit down from double A in the prior quarter and at the end of the second quarter. This is largely due to the fact that in July, when we funded the new liquidity management for the next fourth year tranche, the individual positions that Insight was buying were a little bit lower in credit quality based upon their view of that being a more attractive area of their universe. This is all in line with the investment guidelines. Just be aware that Insight had been buying a little bit lower. The other two managers were remaining higher in credit quality there. So it's a little bit of a slippage, not enough where I would flag it as a concern. Just be aware of it. The duration at 2.1 years, again, a little bit longer than what we saw last quarter. This makes sense given that they just bought a new fourth year. They just bought a little bit longer dated piece of credit there. Again, right in line with expectations. And we had 46 months of benefit payments in reserve as of 9/30. So we did the refresh in July. Bring us back up to 4 years, and you're seeing 2 years, 2 months of those, that 4 years paid off there. Growth, this is an area where we've seen a bit of improvement from the prior quarter. Keep in mind that the U.S., of everything in the growth portfolio, the U.S. equity markets are the top performer of everything in there over the past 5 years. Anything you did in the way of diversification, and we've done considerable diversification, is going to detract from U.S. equity. Now, we measure ourselves against a global benchmark, the MSCI ACWI, which is U.S., non-US and emerging market equity, and we basically say, if we could have bought that as a broad representation of the global growth market, how did we do relative to that? And over 5 years, we have a trailing return of 9.6, so on an absolute basis, we're getting a good solid return there. Relative to the MSCI benchmark, or relative MSCI ACWI benchmark, we're seeing outperformance of about 1%, 90 basis points, just about 1% there. That's starting to get to the premium that we expect from active management. That was a little bit lower last quarter. It's come up on a relative basis now. And I think that last point is probably the thing I focus on most. Did we efficiently deploy capital relative to the opportunities that are available? And do we assume risk where we were rewarded to assume risk? And this is measured by the Sharpe ratio. So it's basically what did we get in terms of return for whatever risk level we assumed relative to the benchmark. And you'll see we have a Sharpe ratio on the growth portfolio over the past 5 years of 1.6%, which in absolute historical terms is probably about as high as we're likely to see it. This is a very solid return. We've seen good solid returns with very low risk. But you'll notice that we still are outperforming the MSCI ACWI benchmark at one. So we have a good premium. We're deploying capital more efficiently than just broadcasting it into the equity markets there. Risk diversifying, where I noted that we do have some issues there. What is working is we're seeing the beta of zero. We're seeing not correlated to the growth portfolio. It is a good offset to the growth portfolio. Now, of course, you can get to be a good offset in a couple of different ways. Unfortunately, what we're seeing here is the absolute real return, or I'm trying to add that, so the real return. So the return of the portfolio minus inflation is coming in negative. We're not keeping up with inflation in this portion of the portfolio. So that is below expectations. Keep in mind that this is still under development. This is a portion of the portfolio that probably has the farthest to go in terms of build out. Ed mentioned we're getting close to our target allocations, but we just have gone through the process of restructuring this. We brought in Parametric Defensive Equity only in July. We're still incubating a couple of ideas in this space. We wanted to see them get tested by a more volatile marketplace. The fourth quarter is providing a nice natural laboratory for that testing. So, you know, I would expect that in 2019, there are 2 to 3 of these strategies that we were said, hey, that's a new and interesting idea, but it hasn't been stress tested in real time, are getting stress tested in real time. I think we'll have some more enhancements that we can bring back to the board next year in that space. We can always, the last test there is the ability to redeploy that capital. So we measure its liquidity, and we can liquidate 100% of this portfolio within 90 days based upon our stress testing in that space. So that bottom panel, the total fund, again, if each sub-portfolio is meeting expectations, the total fund should be working as expected. And we're seeing we have our 4 years of benefit payments in reserve. We're meeting expectations there. We're participating in the growth opportunities, and we're doing it on a capital efficient basis, meeting expectations there. The diversifying is providing an offset to growth volatility, yes, but not in quite the way we want it to. We want to improve the net of inflation returns on that portion of the portfolio, but in broad speaking, it is meeting expectations, and we know we have more work to do there. And on the total fund Sharpe ratio, that's where we're getting a nice premium to the overall global equity benchmark. So that is performing as expected. The remainder of the report goes into on a line item by line item basis, everything in the liquidity, growth, and diversifying sub-portfolio. I'm not going to take you through each line item there, but just a real quick synopsis. If you take a look at page 5, and you take a look at William Blair, this is an area where the performance, the short-term performance is slightly below benchmark and peer group. Longer-term numbers remain competitive, but what we are seeing there is the product assets are shrinking slightly over the past year, down 6%. The firm assets down 16%. So this is an area where we start to have, you know, we raise some additional questions. We're seeing lackluster performance. Lackluster might be a slight overstatement there, but short term, we're seeing some concerns on the performance side. We've had personnel turnover there over the years, so we think it's been well telegraphed, but you know, not everybody might agree with that. And now we're seeing firm right assets shrink a little bit. This will be a firm that we're going to conduct additional on-site due diligence on over the next 3 to 6 months to understand what's going on in terms of organizational health. I don't have anything to report there. This is, call it a yellow flag.
Something. How much did you say they've dropped? 16%?
16%. So that's a combination of market movements because they are largely non-U.S. exposed. So the non-U.S. markets have come down. Their firm growth is going to come down. And we want to understand how much of that is strictly market movement versus client redemptions or client losses.
Well, yeah, client redemptions. We need to dissect that still. Concerned with.
Yeah. So that's an area that we'll be looking into further.
All right.
On TT International, you'll see the opposite problem there. They have grown their product dramatically. It's up 89% over the past year. This is a small product. When we came into it, it was roughly $500 million. And that was over a year ago. Now they're up to about $3.5 billion in the product. They do intend to soft close it at $4 billion, so they're getting ready to stop taking additional capital there. But that's experiencing some very dramatic growth. Allianz, if you take a look at the bottom portion of this page and the Allianz there, this is a high yield bond portfolio. Relative to the overall growth opportunity set, we're not seeing as robust returns there. So up 2% over the past year, up 4% over the past 5 years. The high yield space does remain challenged. It has not added value relative to that broad equity benchmark. And now you can quibble with me of saying, why on earth are you measuring high yield bonds against global equities? Well, in my mind, they're both tied to global economic growth and they're pursuing it in different strategies. So we should still be rewarded for taking on the high yield style of risk. And that marketplace has remained, it's remained challenged relative to other opportunity sets we have available to us. This is largely intended to be the funding source for the private credit program going forward. You'll recall back in September, StepStone's private credit team was here, and we talked about, when are we going to see material assets start to be deployed? And we said, talk to us this time next year. Over the next 9 months, we do expect to see a large portion of this drawn down to fund the private credit program. And I think the only other thing I was going to comment on here would be private equity. If we take a look at the bottom there, we talk about the 1 in 5 year premium. We haven't seen private equity outperform. We've actually seen it underperform. Now, this is largely on the strength of the public equity markets rather than on necessarily weakness in the private equity markets. We do expect over time to get compensated for that illiquidity. Over this particular 5 year period, the equity markets have had robust growth. It's a little bit more difficult for them to keep up there. Some of the things we're doing to change the outcomes there obviously are migrating away from the fund-to-funds model into the direct implementation model. And we will have StepStone's private equity side here at the next meeting to talk about performance and pacing in that space. And we can have a more dedicated private equity conversation in December around that. One more thing of note, and that is on page 8. For the past year and a half, we've had a note on here that Wellington had a regulatory action pending. They had an SEC inquiry of the valuation methodology that they were using in a private equity program, so completely unrelated to our strategy. That was recently closed with no additional action required there, so that is closed out. Just to wrap it up on slides 9 and 10, we take a look at the top portion of slide 9, and what we look there is on a total fund basis, are we capturing more of the up markets and less of the down markets? And that top line says we're capturing, between over the past several years, we've been capturing between 85 and 95% of up markets. That's good. We know we have a little bit more of a lower risk implementation model right now, so we wouldn't expect to capture 100%, but capturing 85 to 95 is right where we're expected to be. And importantly, capture less of the downside. And while you've seen that number come back up from where it was in the 45% range, that was unsustainably low. That was luck plays a significant portion in some of this. And now we've seen that come back up to the 65% range. What we look for there is to maintain that spread. If we're capturing more of the upside and less of the downside, we're on the right track, and we're on the right track there. The only other thing I would comment on slide 10, we take a look at the Sharpe ratio of our implementation approach versus the policy versus the target index of that, that naive, simple implementation target index. And over the 1, 3, 5, and 10 years, we see a superior Sharpe ratio. If you take a look at the actual numbers, we are getting about the same return or higher return with significantly less risk over each one of those trailing time periods there. Again, confirmation that our capital deployment is efficient. So that would conclude my remarks on the staff report, unless there's any questions from the board.
Just a compliment. Thank you for page 6 and 7 manager notes. it was nice to read that and see what's going on.
Any other questions or comments?
Rescue.
We don't provide this very report, the quarterly report, on the website, do we? Or could we, under investments, under the...
Quarterly report, what do you mean?
This quarterly report, since it's presented.
It's on the website.
This alone?
As part of the board packet.
Yeah.
As part of the board packet, yes. That was the one that was...
Oh, it's a separate place.
Separate it out and put it in on the same webpage as the performance report.
As the annual ones?
As the annual ones, or the quarterly ones.
They're on quarterly.
Aren't they after? Quarterlies are on there.
Well, I'm speaking specifically to this one here.
Because it's usually just in the board packet. We don't have it separate somewhere on the website.
Tim's letter, yeah. I just like it, and if I wanted to go back to it, either I got to hang on to all these or separate it out, or just...
We can take a look at it.
All right.
Thank you, Tim.
Good report.